There was no ladder, no evidence anyone had climbed into or out of there. He looked up. The garden wasn't overlooked. No one could have witnessed what had happened here. What had happened here? Chief Inspector Gamache was asking for his opinion, his educated, thoughtful analysis. "Christ," he prayed, "Christ, give me an opinion." When Inspector Beauvoir had called and asked that one of the local Sûreté officers meet the plane and accompany them to the monastery, Captain Charbonneau had taken the job himself. As head of the detachment, he could have assigned anyone, but that was never a consideration. He wanted it for himself. And not just to see the inside of the famous abbey. Captain Charbonneau also wanted to meet Chief Inspector Gamache. "There's blood on the grass over there," Charbonneau waved to a section cordoned off with crime scene tape. "And by the marks on the grass, it looks as though he dragged himself a few feet over here."
"Or was dragged," suggested Gamache, "by his killer."
"Unlikely, Patron. There are no deep footprints on the grass or in the flower bed here."
"Good," said Gamache, looking around. "Now, why would a dying man drag himself here?"
They all considered the body again. Frère Mathieu was curled into a fetal position, his knees up, his arms wrapped tightly around his stout stomach, his head tucked in. His back was against the stone wall of the garden.
"Was he trying to make himself small?" asked Beauvoir. "He looks like a ball."
And he did, a quite large black ball that had come to rest against the wall.
"But why?" Gamache asked again. "Why not drag himself toward the monastery? Why move away from it?"
"Maybe he was disoriented," said Charbonneau, "was going more on instinct than thought.
Maybe there was no reason."
"Maybe," said Gamache. All three continued to stare at the body of Frère Mathieu. Captain Charbonneau glanced across at Gamache, who was deep in thought. He was inches from the man, could see all the lines of his face, both natural and man-made. He could even smell the man, the slightest tint of sandalwood. And something else. Rosewater. He'd seen the chief inspector on television, of course. Charbonneau had even flown to Montréal to attend a police conference where Gamache was the keynote speaker. The topic was the Sûreté motto, Service, Intégrité, Justice. That was always the keynote topic, and over the years it had become a pep rally, an orgy of self-congratulations to end the annual Sûreté conference. Except when Chief Inspector Gamache had given the talk, just a few months earlier. At first, Gamache had shocked the 1,000 officers in the audience by talking about his own failings in each of those areas, where he could have done better, where he'd failed to do anything at all. And he made clear the failures of the Sûreté itself, bringing home with precision and clarity where the police force had let down, even betrayed the trust of the people of Quebec, time and again. It was a merciless indictment of a force Gamache believed in. And that's what became clear. Armand Gamache believed in them. He believed in the Sûreté and in service and integrity and justice. He could do better, they could do better, as individuals and as a force. By the end of the talk, the 1,000 officers were on their feet, cheering, revitalized, inspired. Except, Captain Charbonneau had noticed, a small cadre in the front row. They too stood. They too clapped. How could they not? But from his position off to the side, Charbonneau could see their hearts were not in it, and God only knew where their heads were at. These were the superintendents of the Sûreté, the leadership, and the Minister of Justice. He wanted now to lean forward, over the body, to lower his voice and say, "I don't know why this man crawled away, but I do know something you should hear. You might not have as many friends in the force as you think, as you believe." He opened his mouth to speak, but closed it again on looking into the chief's face, at the scars, and the deep, intelligent eyes. "This man knows," Charbonneau realized. "Chief Inspector Gamache knows his days on the force might be numbered."
"What do you think?" Gamache asked again.
"I think he knew exactly what was going to happen to him."
"Go on," said the chief. "I think he did his best, but it was too late. He couldn't get away." No, agreed Gamache. There was nowhere to go.
The two men stared at each other for a moment, understanding each other. But why didn't he leave a message? Asked Beauvoir.
I'm sorry?
Charbonneau turned to the younger man. Well, he'd seen his killer. He knew he was dying. He had the strength to crawl all this way. Why didn't he use some of that last energy to leave us a message? Beauvoir asked.
They looked around, but the earth had been trampled, not by them, but by a bunch of monks, well-meaning or otherwise.
Maybe it's simpler than that, said Charbonneau. Maybe he was like an animal, curling up to die alone.
Gamache felt an overwhelming sympathy for the dead man. To die alone, almost certainly struck down by someone he knew and trusted. Was that the alarm on this man's face? Not that he was dying, but that it was at the hands of a brother. Was that how Abel had looked as he fell to the earth? They bent over the monk again. Frère Mathieu was in late middle age and rotund, a man who didn't appear to deny himself much. If he mortified his flesh, it was with food, and maybe drink, though he didn't have the ruddy, bloated complexion of the dissolute. The prior simply looked well satisfied with his life, though clearly more than a little disappointed by his death.
Could there be another blow? Asked the chief. To his abdomen, perhaps?
And blessed is the fruit of thy womb. Beauvoir also leaned closer and nodded. His arms are wrapped around his stomach. Do you think he was in pain?
Gamache stood up and absently brushed dirt from his knees.
I'll leave him to you, Inspector.
Captain.
The chief inspector retraced his steps, careful not to wander from the path he'd already created.
Holy Mary, Mother of God.
The monks continued to repeat the Hail Mary.
How did they know when to stop? Gamache wondered. When was it enough?
He knew what his goal was, to find whoever had killed Frère Mathieu.
Pray for us sinners. But what was theirs, these three black-robed figures? Now and at the hour of our death. Amen.
Chapter 5. The chief watched the monks for a few moments, then he turned and watched Beauvoir. He'd put on weight, and while still lean, he was no longer gaunt. Jean-Guy's face had filled out, and the shadows under his eyes had disappeared. But more than the physical change, Beauvoir now seemed happy. Indeed, happier than Gamache had ever seen him. Not the feverish, giddy heights of the addict, but a settled calm. Gamache knew it was a long and treacherous road back, but Beauvoir was at least on it. Gone were the mood swings, the irrational outbursts, the rage and the whining. Gone were the pills, the Oxycontin and Percocet. It was one of the terrible ironies that medications meant to relieve pain would finally cause so much. God knew, thought Gamache, as he watched his inspector, Beauvoir had had genuine pain, had needed those pills. But then he'd needed to stop. And he had, with help. Gamache hoped it wasn't too soon for his inspector to be back on the job, but suspected what Beauvoir needed now was normalcy. To not be treated as though he was handicapped. Still, Gamache knew Jean-Guy needed watching, for any cracks in the calm. For now, though, Gamache turned away from the agent, knowing they had a job to do. And he turned away from the monks, knowing they also had their job. And he had his. Gamache looked around the garden. It was the first chance he'd had to really take it in. It was square, roughly 40 feet by 40. Not meant for sports or large gatherings. The monks would not be playing soccer here. Gamache noticed a wicker basket with gardening implements dropped on the ground. There was also a black medical bag close to the praying monks. He began to wander, looking at the perennials, at the herbs all marked and named. Echinacea, meadowsweet, St. John's wort, chamomile. Gamache was no gardener, but he suspected these weren't just herbs or flowers, but medicinal. He looked around again. Everything here seemed to have a purpose, to be thought out. Including, he suspected, the body. There was a purpose to this murder. His job was to find it. A curved stone bench sat under the maple in the center of the garden. Most of the tree's autumn leaves had fallen. Most had been raked up, but some were scattered on the grass. And a few, like forlorn hope, clung to the mother tree. In summer, in full leaf, there would be a magnificent canopy throwing dappled light over the garden. Not much of this garden would be in full sun, not much in complete shade. The abbot's garden had achieved a balance between light and dark. But now, in autumn, it seemed to be dying. But that, too, was the natural cycle. It would be deviant, abnormal, if all was in perpetual flower. The walls were, Gamache guessed, at least 10 feet high. No one climbed out of the garden, and the only way in was through the abbot's bedroom, through the secret door. Gamache looked back at the monastery. No one inside the monastery could come into, or even see into, the abbot's garden. Did they even know it was here, Gamache wondered? Was that possible? Was this not only a private garden, but a secret one? Dom Philippe repeated the rosary. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. His head was bowed, but his eyes were open, just a slit. He watched the police officers in the garden, bending over Mathieu, taking his picture, prodding him. How Mathieu, always so fastidious, so precise, would have hated this. To die in the dirt. Holy Mary, Mother of God, how could Mathieu be dead? Dom Philippe mouthed the rosary, trying to concentrate on the simple prayer. He said the words and heard his brother monks beside him, heard their familiar voices, felt their shoulders against his, felt the sunshine on his head and smelt the musky autumn garden. But now nothing seemed familiar any more. The words, the prayer, even the sunshine felt foreign. Mathieu was dead. How could I not have known? Pray for us sinners. How could I not have known? The words became his new rosary. How could I not have known that it would all end in murder? Gamache had come full circle and stopped in front of the praying monks. He had the impression as he approached that the abbot had been watching him. One thing was obvious. In the few minutes Gamache had been in the garden, the abbot's energy had diminished even further. If the Hail Marys were meant to comfort, it wasn't working. Or perhaps, without the prayers, Dom Philippe would be in worse shape. He seemed like a man on the verge of collapse. Pardon, said Gamache. The two monks stopped their prayers, but Dom Philippe continued to the end. Now and in the hour of our death. And together they intoned, Amen. Dom Philippe opened his eyes. Yes, my son. It was the traditional greeting of a priest to a parishioner, or an abbot to his monks. Gamache, though, was neither, and he wondered why Dom Philippe would use that term with him. Was it habit? An offer of affection? Or was it something else? A claim to authority, a father's over a child? I have some questions. Of course, said the abbot, while the other two remained silent. I understand one of you found Frère Mathieu. The monk to the right of the abbot shot Dom Philippe a look, and the abbot gave a very small nod. I did. The monk was shorter than Dom Philippe and slightly younger. His eyes were wary.
And you are?
Simon.
Perhaps, mon frère, you can describe what happened this morning.
Frère Simon turned to the abbot, who nodded again.
I came in here after Lourdes to tidy up the garden. Then I saw him.
What did you see?
Frère Mathieu.
Oui. But did you know it was him?
No.
Who did you think it might be?
Frère Simon lapsed into silence.
It's all right, Simon. We need to speak the truth, said the abbot.
Oui, Père Abbé.
The monk didn't look happy or convinced, but he did obey.
I thought it was the abbot.
Why?
Because no one else comes in here, only him and me.
Gamache considered that for a moment.
What did you do?
I went to see.
Gamache glanced over at the wicker basket on its side, the contents tumbling out onto the autumn leaves, the rake thrown down.
Did you walk or run?
Again that hesitation.
I ran.
Gamache could imagine the scene. The middle-aged monk with his basket, preparing to garden, to rake up the dead leaves, entering this peaceful garden to do what he'd done so many times before. Then seeing the unthinkable, a man collapsed at the base of the wall. Without doubt, the abbot. And what had Frère Simon done? He'd dropped his tools and run, as fast as his robed legs would carry him.
And when you got to him, what did you do?
I saw that it wasn't Père Abbé at all. Describe for me, please, everything that you did.
I knelt down. Every word seemed to cause him pain, either because of the memory or just their existence, the very act of speaking.
And I moved his hood. It had fallen across his face. That's when I saw it wasn't the abbot.
It wasn't the abbot. That was what seemed to matter to this man, not who it was, but who it wasn't.
Gamache listened closely to the words, the tone, the space between the words. And what he heard now was relief.
Did you touch the body? Move him?
I touched his hood and his shoulders, shook him, then I went to get the doctor.
Frère Simon looked at the other monk.
He was younger than the other two, but not by much. The stubble on his close-cropped head was also greying. He was shorter and slightly rounder than the other two, and his eyes, while somber, held none of the anxiety of his companions.
"Are you the doctor?"
Gamache asked, and the monk nodded. He seemed almost amused. But Gamache wasn't fooled. One of Rennemarie's brothers laughed in funerals and wept at weddings. A friend of theirs always laughed when someone yelled at him. Not from amusement, but an overflow of strong emotion. Sometimes the two got mixed up, especially in people unused to showing emotion. The medical monk, while appearing amused, might in fact be the most devastated.
Charles, the monk offered, I'm the medecin.
Tell me how you found out about the death of the prior.
I was with the animals when Frère Simon came to get me. He took me aside and said there'd been an accident.
Were you alone?
No. There were other brothers there, but Frère Simon was careful to keep his voice low. I don't think they heard.
Gamache turned back to Frère Simon.
Did you really think it was an accident?
I wasn't sure, and I didn't know what else to say.
I'm sorry, Gamache turned back to the doctor. I interrupted you.
I ran to the infirmary, grabbed my medical bag, and we came here. Gamache could imagine the two black-robed monks running through the sparkling halls.
"Did you meet anyone on the way?"
"Not a soul," said Frère Charles. "It was our work period. Everyone was at their chores."
"What did you do when you arrived in the garden?"
"I looked for a pulse, of course, but his eyes were enough to tell me he was dead, even if I hadn't seen the wound."
"And what did you think when you did?"
At first I wondered if he'd fallen off the wall, but I could see that was impossible.
And then what did you think?
Frère Charles looked at the abbot.
Go on, said Dom Philippe.
I thought someone had done this to him.
Who?
I honestly hadn't a clue.
Gamache paused to scrutinize the doctor. In his experience, when someone said honestly, it was often a prelude to a lie. He tucked that impression away and turned to the abbot.
"I wonder, sir, if you and I might talk some more."
The abbot didn't look surprised. He looked as though nothing could shock him any more.
"Of course."
Dom Philippe bowed to the other two monks, catching their eyes, and the chief wondered what message had just passed between them. Did monks who lived silently together develop a form of telepathy, an ability to read each other's thoughts? If so, that gift had sorely failed the prior.
Dom Philippe led Gamache to the bench under the tree, away from the activity. From there they couldn't see the body, they couldn't see the monastery. Instead, the view was to the wall and the medicinal herbs and the tops of the trees beyond.
"I'm finding it hard to believe this has happened," said the abbot. "You must hear that all the time. Does everyone say that?"
"Most do. It would be a terrible thing if murder wasn't a shock."
The abbot sighed and stared into the distance. Then he closed his eyes and brought his slender hands to his face. There was no sobbing, no weeping, not even praying. Just silence. His long, elegant hands like a mask over his face. Another wall between himself and the outside world. Finally, he dropped his hands into his lap. They rested there, limp. "He was my best friend, you know. We're not supposed to have best friends in a monastery. We're all supposed to be equal. All friends, but none too much. But of course that's the ideal. Like Julian of Norwich, we aspire to an all-consuming love of God. But we're flawed and human, and sometimes we also love our fellow man. There are no rules for the heart." Gamache listened and waited, and tried not to overinterpret what he was being told. "I can't tell you how often Mathieu and I sat here. He'd sit where you are now. Sometimes we'd discuss the business of the monastery. Sometimes we'd just read. He'd bring his scores for the chance. I'd be gardening, or sitting quietly, and hear him humming under his breath. I don't think he even knew he was doing it, or that I could hear. But I could." The abbot's gaze drifted to the wall and the tips of the forest like dark steeples beyond. He sat quietly for a moment, lost in what was now and forever the past. The scene he described would never be repeated. That overheard sound would never be heard again. "Murder?" he finally whispered. "Here?" He returned to Gamache. "And you've come to find out which of us did it. The chief inspector, you said. So we get the boss?" Gamache smiled.
Not the big boss, I'm afraid. I also have bosses."
"Don't we all?" said Dom Philippe. "At least yours can't see everything you do."
"And know everything I think and feel," said Gamache. "I'm grateful for that every day."
"Though neither can they bring you peace and salvation."
Gamache nodded. "That much is certain."
"Patron?" Beauvoir was standing a few feet away. Excusing himself, Gamache walked over to his inspector. "We're ready to move the body, but where should we take him?" Gamache thought about that for a moment, then looked at the two praying monks.
That man over there," Gamache pointed to Frère Charles, "is the médecin. Go with him to get a stretcher and take Frère Mathieu back to the infirmary."
Gamache paused for a moment, and Beauvoir knew him well enough to wait.
"He was the choir director here, you know."
Gamache looked once again at the balled-up body of Frère Mathieu. To Beauvoir, this was just another fact, a piece of information. But he could see it meant more to the chief.
"Is that important?" asked Beauvoir. "It could be."
"It's important to you, isn't it?" said Beauvoir.
"It's a shame," said the chief. "A great loss. He was a genius, you know. I was listening to his music on the way in."
"I thought maybe you were.
Have you ever heard it?"
"Hard not to. It was everywhere a couple of years ago. Couldn't turn on a damned station without hearing it."
Gamache smiled. "And not a fan?"
"Are you kidding? Of Gregorian chants? A bunch of men singing without instruments, practically in a monotone, in Latin? What's not to love?" The chief smiled at Beauvoir and returned to the abbot. "Who could have done such a thing?" Dom Philippe asked under his breath when Gamache resumed his seat. "I've been asking myself that all morning." The abbot turned to his companion. "And why didn't I see it coming?" Gamache was silent, knowing the question wasn't directed at him. But the answer would come from him, eventually. And he realized something else. Dom Philippe had not tried to imply that an outsider had somehow done this. He'd not even tried to convince Gamache or himself that it was an accident, an unlikely fall. There was none of the usual squirming away from the awful truth. Frère Mathieu had been murdered, and one of the other monks had done it. On the one hand, Gamache admired Dom Philippe's ability to face reality, no matter how terrible. But Gamache was also puzzled that this man so easily accepted it. The abbot claimed to be astonished that murder should happen here. And yet he didn't do what would be most human. He didn't look for another explanation, no matter how ludicrous.
And Chief Inspector Gamache began to wonder just how shocked Dom Philippe really was.
Frère Mathieu was killed between 8:15, when your service ended, and 8:40, when he was found by your secretary, said the chief. Where were you at the time?
Right after Lourdes, I went to the basement to discuss the geothermal system with Frère Raymond. He looks after the physical plant, the engineering of the monastery.
You have geothermal here?
That's right. Geothermal heats the monastery and solar panels power it. With winter coming, I had to make sure it was working. I was down there when Brother Simon found me and told me the news.
What time was that?
Close to 9, I think.
What did Frère Simon say?
Only that it appeared Frère Mathieu had had some sort of accident in my garden.
Did he tell you that Frère Mathieu was dead?
Eventually. As I rushed back, he came out with it. He'd gone to get the doctor first, and then me. By then they knew it was fatal.
But did he tell you any more?
That Mathieu had been killed?
That he'd been murdered?
The doctor did. When I arrived here, the doctor was standing at the door waiting. He tried to stop me from going closer, and said Mathieu wasn't just dead, but that it looked as though someone had killed him.
And what did you say?
I can't remember what I said, but I suspect it was something not taught at the seminary.
Dom Philippe cast his mind back. He'd shoved by the doctor and run, stumbling, to the far end, to what looked like a mound of dark earth, but wasn't. As he saw it in his memory, he described it to the large, quiet Sûreté officer beside him. And then I dropped to my knees beside him, said Dom Philippe.
Did you touch him?
Yes. I touched his face and his robe. I think I straightened it. I don't know why. Who would do such a thing?
Again, Gamache ignored the question. Time enough for the answer.
What was Frère Mathieu doing here, in your garden?
I have no idea. It wasn't to see me. I'm always out at that time. It's when I do my rounds.
And he'd know that?
He was my prior. He knew it better than most.
What did you do after you'd seen his body?
Gamache asked.
The abbot thought about that. We prayed first, and then I called the police. We have only one phone. It's a satellite thing. Doesn't always work, but it did this morning.
Did you consider not calling?
The question surprised the abbot, and he studied this quiet stranger with new appreciation.
I'm ashamed to admit it was my first thought, to keep it to ourselves. We're used to being self-sufficient.
Then why did you call?
Not for Mathieu, I'm afraid, but for the others.
What do you mean?
Mathieu is gone now. He's with God.
Gamache hoped that was true. For Frère Mathieu, there were no more mysteries. He knew who took his life. And he now knew if there was a God, and a heaven, and angels, and even a celestial choir. It didn't bear thinking about what happened to the celestial choir when yet another director showed up.
But the rest of us are here, Dom Philippe continued. I didn't call you in for vengeance or to punish whoever did this. The deed is done. Mathieu is safe. We, on the other hand, are not.
It was, Gamache knew, the simple truth. It was also the reaction of a father to protect, or a shepherd to keep the flock safe from a predator.
A Saint-Gilbert entre les loups.
Saint Gilbert among the wolves. It was a curious name for a monastery. The abbot knew there was a wolf in the fold, in a black robe and shaved head, and whispering soft prayers. Dom Philippe had called in hunters to find him. Beauvoir and the doctor had returned with the stretcher and had placed it beside Frère Mathieu. Gamache stood and gave a silent signal. The body was lifted onto the stretcher, and Frère Mathieu left the garden for the last time. The abbot led a small procession, followed by Frère Simon and Charles. Then Captain Charbonneau at the head of the stretcher, and Beauvoir behind. Gamache was the last to leave the abbot's garden, closing the bookcase behind him. They walked into the rainbow corridor. The joyful colours played on the body and the mourners. As they arrived at the church, the rest of the community stood and filed from the benches, joining them,
walking behind Gamache. The abbot, Dom Philippe, began to recite a prayer. Not the rosary, something else. And then Gamache realized the abbot wasn't speaking, he was singing. And it wasn't simply a prayer, it was a chant. A Gregorian chant. Slowly the other monks joined in, and the singing swelled to fill the corridor and join with the light. It would have been beautiful, if not for the certainty that one of the men singing the words of God in the voice of God was a killer. Chapter 6. Four men gathered around the gleaming examination table. Armand Gamache and Inspector Beauvoir stood on one side, the doctor across from them, and the abbot off to the side. Frère Mathieu lay on the stainless steel table, terrified face to the ceiling. The other monks had gone off to do what monks did at a time like this. Gamache wondered what that might be. Most people, in Gamache's experience, groped and stumbled, barking their shins against familiar scents and sights and sounds, as though struck with vertigo, falling over the edge of their known world. Captain Charbonneau had been detailed to search for the murder weapon. It was, Gamache believed, a long shot, but one that needed to be taken. It appeared the prior had been killed by a rock. If so, it had almost certainly been tossed over the wall to be lost in the old gross forest. The chief inspector glanced around. He'd expected the infirmary to be old, ancient even. He'd privately prepared himself to see something out of the Dark Ages. Operating tables made of stone slabs, with open gutters for the fluids. Wooden shelves with dried and powdered herbs from the garden. Hacksaws for surgery. Instead, this room was brand spanking new, with shining equipment, orderly cabinets filled with gauze and bandages, pills and tongue depressors. "The coroner will do the autopsy," said Gamache to the doctor. "We don't want you doing any medical procedures on the prior. All I need is for his clothing to be removed so we can properly search them. And I need to see his body." "Why?" "In case there are other wounds or marks. Anything else we should see. The faster we can collect the facts, the sooner we can get at the truth."
"But there's a difference between fact and truth, Chief Inspector," said the abbot.
"And one day you and I can sit in that lovely garden of yours and discuss it," said Gamache. "But not now."
He turned his back on the abbot and nodded to the doctor, who got to work. The dead man was no longer curled in the fetal position. Though rigor mortis was setting in, they had managed to lay him flat on his back. The prior's hands, Gamache noted, were still buried up the long black sleeves of his cassock and wrapped around his midsection, as though gripping in pain. After untying the cord around the prior's middle, the doctor pried the dead man's hands from his sleeves. Both Gamache and Beauvoir leaned forward to see if they had hold of anything. Was there anything under his nails? Anything in those balled-up fists? But they were empty, the nails clean and tidy. The doctor carefully placed Frère Mathieu's arms at his side, but the left arm slipped off the metal table and dangled. Something dropped from the sleeve and drifted to the floor. The doctor stooped to pick it up. "Don't touch that," Beauvoir ordered, and the doctor stopped. Putting on a pair of gloves from the scene of crime kit, Beauvoir bent and picked a piece of paper off the stone floor.
"What is it?"
The abbot stepped forward. The doctor leaned across the examination table, the body forgotten in favour of what Inspector Beauvoir held.
"I don't know," said Beauvoir.
The doctor came around the table, and the four men stood in a circle, staring at the page. It was yellowed and irregular, not store-bought, thicker than commercial-grade paper. On it, in intricate script, were words. The black letters calligraphied, not ornately, but in a simple style.
"I can't read it. Is it Latin?" asked Beauvoir.
"I think so." The abbot leaned forward, squinting. Gamache put on his half-moon reading glasses and also bent toward the paper.
"It looks like a page from an old manuscript," he finally said, stepping back.
The abbot looked perplexed.
"It's not paper. It's vellum. Sheepskin. You can tell by the texture."
"Sheepskin?" asked Beauvoir. "Is that what you use for paper?"
not for hundreds of years. The abbot continued to stare at the page in the inspector's hand. The text doesn't seem to make sense. It might be Latin, but not from any psalm or book of vows or religious text I know. I can only make out two words.
What are they? Asked the chief.
Here, the abbot pointed. That looks like Dies Irae. The doctor made a small noise that might have been a guffaw. They looked at him, but he fell completely silent.
What does that mean? Asked Beauvoir.
It's from the Requiem Mass, said the abbot.
It means Day of Wrath, said Gamache. Dies Irae, he quoted, Dies Illa. Day of Wrath, Day of Mourning.
That's right, said the abbot. In the Requiem Mass the two are said together. But here there is no Dies Illa.
What does that tell you, Dom Philippe?
Asked the chief.
The abbot was quiet for a moment, considering. It tells me this isn't the Requiem Mass.
Does it make any sense to you, Fréchard?
Gamache asked.
The doctor's brow was creased in concentration as he stared at the vellum in Beauvoir's hand. Then he shook his head.
I'm afraid not. Neither of you have seen this before? Gamache pressed.
The doctor glanced at the abbot. Dom Philippe continued to stare at the words and finally shook his head.
There was a pause. Then Beauvoir pointed to the page.
What are those?
Once again the men leaned forward. Above each word there were tiny squiggles of ink, like little waves or wings.
I think they're neumes, said the abbot at last.
Neumes? Asked Gamache. What's that?
Now the abbot was clearly bewildered.
They're a musical notation.
I've never seen it before, said Beauvoir.
You wouldn't.
The abbot stepped away from the page. They haven't been used for 1,000 years.
I don't understand, said Gamache. Is this page 1,000 years old?
It might be, said Dom Philippe, and that might explain the text. It might be plain chant using an old form of Latin. But he didn't seem convinced.
By plain chant, do you mean Gregorian chant?
Asked the chief. The abbot nodded.
Could this be, the chief pointed to the page, a Gregorian chant?
The abbot looked again at the page and shook his head. I don't know. It's the words. They're Latin, but they're nonsense. Gregorian chants follow very old and prescribed rules, and are almost always from the Psalms. This isn't.
Dom Philippe lapsed into his habitual silence. There seemed no more to be learned from the paper at the moment. Gamache turned to the doctor.
Please continue.
Over the next 20 minutes, Fréchard stripped Brother Mathieu, taking off the layers of clothing, struggling with the rigour, until lying before them on the examination table was the naked man.
How old was Frère Mathieu?
Gamache asked.
I can show you his file, said the doctor, but I believe he was 62.
In good health?
Yes, a slightly enlarged prostate, a slightly elevated PSA, but we were monitoring that. He was about 30 pounds overweight, as you can see, around the middle. But he wasn't obese, and I'd suggested he take more exercise.
How? Asked Beauvoir. He could hardly join a gym. Did he pray harder?
If he did, said the doctor, he'd hardly be the first person to decide they could pray themselves thin. But as it happens, we put together a couple of hockey teams in the winter. Not NHL caliber, but we're surprisingly good, and quite competitive. Beauvoir stared at Brother Charles as though he'd just spoken Latin. It was almost indecipherable. Monks playing competitive hockey? He could see them on a rink on the frozen lake, cassocks flying, barreling into each other. Muscular Christianity. Maybe these men weren't quite the oddities he'd presumed. Or perhaps that made them all the odder.
Did he?
Asked the chief.
Did he what? Asked the doctor.
Did Frère Mathieu get more exercise?
Brother Charles looked down at the body on his table and shook his head, then met Gamache's eyes. Once again the monk's eyes were tinged with amusement, though his voice was solemn. The prior was not a man to take suggestions easily.
Gamache continued to hold the doctor's eyes until Brother Charles dropped his and spoke again. Beyond that, he was in good health. The chief nodded and looked down at the naked man on the table. He'd been anxious to see if there was indeed a wound to Brother Mathieu's abdomen. But there was nothing there, just flabby, graying skin. His body, except for the crushed skull, was without a mark. Gamache couldn't yet see the blows that led up to the final, catastrophic crushing of this man's skull. But he'd find them. This sort of thing never came out of the blue. There'd be a trail of smaller wounds, bruises, hurt feelings, insults and exclusions. The chief inspector would follow those, and they would lead, inevitably, to the man who'd made this corpse. Chief Inspector Gamache looked over to the desk and the yellowing sheet of thick paper, with its squiggles of, what was that word? Neumes, and its nearly unintelligible text, except for two words, Dies Irae, Day of Wrath, from the Mass for the Dead. What had the prior been trying to do at the hour of his death? When he could do only one more thing in this life, what had he done? Not written in the soft earth the name of his killer. No. Frère Mathieu had shoved that sheet of paper up his sleeve and curled himself around it. What did this jumble of nonsense and neumes tell them? Not much, yet. Except that Frère Mathieu had died trying to protect it. Chapter 7. The chair beside Dom Philippe was empty. It had been years, decades, since the abbot had looked to his right in the chapter house and not seen Mathieu. And now he didn't look to his right. Instead, the abbot kept his steady eyes straight ahead, looking into the faces of the community of Saint-Gilbert-Entre-les-Loups. And they looked back at him, expecting answers, expecting information, expecting comfort, expecting him to say something, anything, to stand between them and their terror. And still he stared, at a loss for words. He'd stored up so many over the years, a warehouse full of thoughts and impressions, of emotions, of things unsaid. But now that he needed words, the warehouse was empty, dark and cold. Nothing left to say. Chief Inspector Gamache leaned forward, his elbows on the worn wood desk, his hands casually holding each other. He looked across at Beauvoir and Captain Charbonneau. Both men had their notebooks out and open, and were ready to report to the chief. After the medical examination, Beauvoir and Charbonneau had interviewed the monks, fingerprinting them, getting initial statements, reactions, impressions, an idea of their movements. While they did that, Chief Inspector Gamache had searched the dead man's cell. It was almost exactly the same as the abbot's. Same narrow bed, same chest of drawers, only his altar was to a Saint Cecilia. Gamache had not heard of her, but he determined to look her up. There was a change of robes, of underwear, of shoes, a nightshirt, books of prayers and the Psalms, and nothing else. Not a single personal item. No photographs, no letters, no parents, no siblings. But then, perhaps God was his father and Mary his mother, and the monks his brothers. It was, after all, a large family. But the office, the prior's office, was a gold mine. Not, sadly, of clues to the case. There was no bloody stone, no threatening signed letter, no murderer waiting to confess. What Gamache did find in the prior's desk were used quill pens and a bottle of open ink. He'd bagged and put them in the satchel, along with the other evidence they'd collected. It had seemed a major find. After all, that sheet of old paper that had fallen from the prior's robe had been written with quill pen and ink. But the more the chief thought about it, the less certain he was that this would prove significant. What were the chances the prior, the choirmaster, a world authority on Gregorian chant, would write something almost unintelligible? The abbot and the doctor had both been baffled by the Latin and those neum things. It seemed more the work of some unschooled, untrained amateur. And it was written on very old paper, vellum, sheepskin, stretched and dried perhaps hundreds of years ago. There was plenty of paper, but no vellum in the prior's desk. Still, Gamache had been careful to bag and label the quills and ink, in case. He also found scores, sheets and sheets of sheet music, books filled with music and histories of music, learned papers on music. But while Frère Mathieu was Catholic in his belief, he was not small-c Catholic in his taste. Only one thing interested him, Gregorian chant. There was a simple cross on the wall with the crucified Christ in agony, and below and surrounding that crucifix was a sea of music. That was the passion of Brother Mathieu, not Christ, but the chants he floated above. Christ might have called Frère Mathieu, but it was to the tune of a Gregorian chant. Gamache had no idea so much had been, or could be, written about plain chant. Though, to be fair, he'd given it no thought, until now. The chief had settled in behind the desk, and while waiting for Beauvoir and Charbonneau to return, he'd begun reading. Unlike the cell, which smelled of cleaning fluid, the office smelled of old socks and smelly shoes and dusty documents. It smelled human. The prior slept in his cell, but he lived here. And Armand Gamache began to see Frère Mathieu as simply Mathieu, a monk, a music director, perhaps a genius, but mostly a man. Charbonneau and Beauvoir eventually returned, and the chief turned his attention to them.
"What did you find?"
Gamache looked at Charbonneau first.
"Nothing, patron. At least I didn't find the murder weapon."
"I'm not surprised," said the chief, "but we had to try. When we get the coroner's report, we'll know if it was a stone or something else. What about the monks?"
"All fingerprinted," said Beauvoir, "and we did the initial interviews. After the 7:30 service, they go to their tours. And now," Beauvoir consulted his notes, "there are four main areas of work at the monastery. The vegetable garden, the animals, the physical repairs to the monastery, which are endless, and the cooking. The monks have an area of expertise, but they also rotate. We found out who was doing what at the crucial time."
At least, thought Gamache, listening to the report, the time of death was fairly clear. Not before Lourdes finished at 8:15, and not after 8:40 when Frère Simon found the body.
25 minutes.
"Anything suspicious?" he asked.
Both men shook their heads.
"They were all at their work," said Charbonneau, "with witnesses."
"But that's not possible," said Gamache calmly. "Frère Mathieu didn't kill himself. One of the brothers wasn't doing what he was assigned to do. At least, I hope it wasn't an assignment."
Beauvoir raised a brow. He presumed the chief was joking, but perhaps it was worth considering.
"Let's try to get at this another way," suggested the chief. "Did any of the monks tell you about a conflict? Was anyone fighting with the prior?"
"No one, patron," said Captain Charbonneau. "At least no one admitted there was conflict. They all seemed genuinely shocked. Unbelievable was the word that kept coming up. Incroyable."
Inspector Beauvoir shook his head. "They believe in a virgin birth, a resurrection, walking on water and some old guy with a white beard floating in the sky and running the world, but this they find unbelievable?" Gamache was quiet for a moment, then nodded.
"It is interesting," he agreed, "what people choose to believe,
and what they do in the name of that faith." How did the monk who'd done this reconcile the murder with his faith? What, in his quiet moments, did the murderer say to the old man with the white beard floating in the sky? Not for the first time that day, the chief inspector wondered why this monastery had been built so far from civilization, and why it had such thick walls, and such high walls, and locked doors. Was it to keep the sins of the world out, or to keep something worse in?
"So," he said, "according to the monks, there were no conflicts at all."
"None," said Captain Charbonneau.
"Someone is lying," said Beauvoir, "or all of them are."
"There is another possibility," said Gamache.
He brought the yellowed page toward him from the middle of the table. Examining it for a moment, he lowered it again and looked into their faces.
"Maybe the murder had nothing to do with the prior himself. Maybe there really was no conflict.
Maybe he was killed because of this.
The chief placed the page on the table again, and again he saw the body as he'd first seen it that morning, curled into a shady corner in the bright garden. He hadn't known it then, but he did now, that at the very center of that dead body was a piece of paper, like a pit in a peach. Was this the motive?
None of the monks noticed anything odd this morning?
Gamache asked. Nothing. Everyone seemed to be doing what they were meant to do. The chief nodded and thought.
And Frère Mathieu, what was he meant to be doing?
Be here in his study, working on the music, said Beauvoir. And that's the only interesting thing that came up. Frère Simon, the abbot's secretary, says he returned to the abbot's office right after Lourdes. Then he had to go to his work at the Animalerie. But on his way he stopped by here.
Why?
Gamache sat forward and removed his glasses. To deliver a message. The abbot apparently wanted to meet with the prior this morning after the 11 a.m. Mass. The words sounded strange on Beauvoir's tongue. Abbots and priors and monks, oh my. They weren't part of the vocabulary of Quebec any more, not part of daily life. In just a generation, those words had gone from respected to ludicrous, and soon they'd disappear completely. A god might be on the side of the monks, thought Beauvoir, but time wasn't. Frère Simon says when he came to make the appointment, no one was in.
That would have been at about 8:20, said the chief, making a note. I wonder why the abbot wanted to see the prior.
Pardon? Asked Inspector Beauvoir.
But the victim was the abbot's right-hand man. It seems likely he and the abbot had regularly scheduled meetings, like we do.
Beauvoir nodded. He and the chief met every morning at 8 to go over the previous day and to review all the homicide cases currently being investigated by Gamache's department. But it was just possible the monastery wasn't quite the same as the homicide department of the Sûreté. And it was just possible the abbot wasn't quite the same as the chief inspector. Still, it seemed a good bet the abbot and prior would have held regular meetings. That would mean, said Beauvoir, that the abbot wanted to talk to the prior about something other than normal monastery business.
It could. Or that it was urgent, unexpected. Something had suddenly come up.
Then why not ask to see the prior right away? Asked Beauvoir. Why wait until after the 11 o'clock Mass?
Gamache thought about that. Good question.
So if the prior didn't return to his office after Lourdes, where did he go?
Maybe he went straight to the garden, said Charbonneau.
Possibly,
the chief said. Then wouldn't Frère Simon, the abbot's secretary, have seen him? Asked Beauvoir. Or passed him in the corridor?
Maybe he did, said the chief.
He lowered his voice and stage whispered to Beauvoir.
Maybe he lied to you.
Beauvoir stage whispered back.
A religious? Lie? Someone's going to hell.
He looked at Gamache with exaggerated concern, then smiled. Gamache smiled back and rubbed his face. They were collecting a lot of facts, and probably more than a few lies.
Frère Simon's name keeps coming up, said Gamache. What do we know about his movements this morning?
Well, this is what he says. Beauvoir flipped a few pages in his notebook and stopped. Right after Lourdes, at 8:15, he returned to the abbot's office. There the abbot asked him to make an appointment for after the 11 o'clock Mass with the prior. The abbot left to look at the geothermal, and Frère Simon left to do his job at the animal place. On his way he stopped by here, looked in. No prior, so he went away.
Was he surprised? Asked Gamache.
Didn't seem surprised or concerned. The prior, like the abbot, pretty much came and went as he liked. Gamache thought about that for a moment.
What did Frère Simon do then?
He worked for 20 minutes or so with the animals, then returned to the abbot's offices to work in the garden. That's when he found the body.
Do we know for sure Frère Simon went to the Animalerie?
Asked the chief. Beauvoir nodded. His story checks. Other monks saw him there.
Could he have left earlier? Asked Gamache. Say, at 8:30.
I wondered the same thing. Beauvoir smiled.
The other monks working there say it's possible. They were all busy with their own chores. But it'd be hard for Brother Simon to do what he had to do in so short a time, and all his chores were done.
What were they?
Asked Gamache. He led the chickens out of their cages and gave them all fresh food and water. Then he cleaned the cages. Not the sort of thing you can pretend to do. Gamache made a few notes, nodding to himself.
The door to the abbot's offices was locked when we arrived. Is it usually?
The men looked at each other.
I don't know, patron, said Beauvoir, making a note. I'll find out.
Good.
It was clearly important. If it was usually locked, then someone had had to let the prior in.
Anything else?
Asked Gamache, looking from Beauvoir to Charbonneau and back again. Nothing, said Beauvoir, except that I tried to hook up this piece of shit, and of course it doesn't work. He waved a disgusted hand at the satellite dish they'd lugged all that way from Montréal. Gamache took a deep breath. That was always a blow to a remote investigation. They brought state-of-the-art equipment into primitive surroundings, and then were surprised when it didn't work.
I'll keep trying, said Beauvoir. There's no telecommunication tower, so our cell phones won't work either. But we can still get text on our Blackberries.
Gamache looked at the time. It was just after 4. They had an hour before the boatman left. A murder investigation was never a leisurely pursuit, but there was even more urgency about this one. They were chasing daylight and the boatman's deadline. Once the sun set, they would all be trapped in the monastery, along with the evidence and the body. And Chief Inspector Gamache didn't want that. Dom Philippe made the sign of the cross over his community. They crossed themselves. And then he sat, and they sat, like shadows mimicking his every move. Or children, he thought. More charitable, and perhaps more accurate. Although some of the monks were considerably older than the abbot, he was their father, their leader. He was far from convinced he was a very good one, certainly not as good as Mathieu, but he was all they had right now.
As you know, Frère Mathieu has died, began the abbot, unexpectedly.
But it got worse. More words were appearing, lining up, crushing forward.
He was killed.
Dom Philippe paused before that last word.
Murdered.
Let us pray, he thought. Let us pray, let us chant. Let us close our eyes and chant the psalms and lose ourselves. Let us retreat to our songs and ourselves, and let that police officer worry about this mess. But this was not the time for retreating, nor was it the time for plain chant. It was the time for plain speech.
The police are here. Most of you have been interviewed by them. We must cooperate. We must have no secrets. That means letting them not only into our cells and our workplaces, but into our thoughts and hearts.
As he spoke these unfamiliar words, he noticed a few nods, and then a few more, and the flat faces of concealed panic began to give way to understanding, to agreement even. Should he go further?
Dear Lord, he silently pleaded, should I go further? Surely this was far enough. Did the rest really need to be said and done?
I'm lifting the rule of silence. There was a sharp intake of breath. His brother monks looked as though he just stripped them of their clothing, left them naked, exposed. It must be done. You're free to talk. Not idle chatter, not gossip, but to help those officers get at the truth. Now their faces were filled with anxiety, their eyes holding his, trying to grab his glance. And while their fear was painful for him to see, he knew it was far more natural than the guarded, empty expressions he'd seen before. And then the abbot took that last, irrevocable step.
"Someone in this monastery killed Brother Mathieu," said Dom Philippe, feeling himself plunging. The problem with words, he knew, was that they could never be taken back.
"Someone in this room killed Brother Mathieu." He'd wanted to comfort them, but all he'd managed to do was strip them naked and terrify them.
"One of us has a confession to make."
Chapter 8. It was time to go.
You have everything? Gamache asked Captain Charbonneau.
Everything except the body.
Best not to forget that, agreed the chief.
5 minutes later, the two Sûreté agents were carrying the covered body of Frère Mathieu on a stretcher from the infirmary. Gamache had looked for the doctor, Frère Charles, to let him know, but there was no sign of the médecin, nor was there any sign of Dom Philippe. He disappeared, as had the abbot's secretary, the taciturn Frère Simon, as had all the dark-robed monks. All gone. The monastery of Saint-Gilbert entre les loups felt not simply quiet, but empty. As they carried Frère Mathieu through the blessed chapel, Gamache scanned the large room. The pews were empty, the long choir benches were empty. Even the playful light had left. No more rainbows, no more prisms. The absence of light wasn't simply darkness. There was a gloom about the place, as though something else was gathering at the edges of the day. As cheerful as the light had been, something equally foreboding was waiting to fill the void. Balance, thought Gamache, as their feet echoed on the slate floors, as they escorted a murdered monk across the church. Équilibre, yin and yang, heaven and hell. Every faith had them, opposites, providing balance. They'd had the daylight, and now the night was coming. They passed out of the church and into the final long corridor. Gamache could see the heavy wooden door at the far end. He could see the wrought-iron deadbolt rammed in place. The door was locked. But against what? They arrived, and the chief looked into the porter's small office. But it, too, was empty. No sign of the young monk, Frère Luc. Only a thick book, which proved to be more, what else, chance. Music, but no monk. It's locked, patron, said Beauvoir, looking into the office. The front door, is there a key? Both men searched, but there was nothing. Charbonneau opened the peephole and looked out. I can see the boatman, he reported, smushing his face against the wooden door, trying for a better look. He's at the dock, waiting. He's looking at his watch. All three officers looked at their watches. 5:20. Beauvoir and Charbonneau looked at Gamache. Find the monks, he said. I'll stay here with the body, in case Frère Luc returns. You split up. We haven't much time. What had seemed an oddity, the sudden absence of monks, was now verging on a crisis. If the boatman left, they'd be stuck there. D'accord, said Beauvoir, but he looked uneasy. Instead of moving off down the corridor, Beauvoir stepped toward the chief and whispered, Would you like my gun? Gamache shook his head. I'm afraid my monk is already dead. Not much of a threat. There are others, though, said Beauvoir, deadly serious, including the one who did this, and the one who locked us in. You'll be alone here. You might need it. Please.
Then what would you do, mon vieux? Asked Gamache, if you run into trouble.
Beauvoir was silent.
I'd rather you keep it. But remember, Jean-Guy, you're looking for the monks, not hunting them.
Looking, not hunting, Beauvoir repeated in mock earnestness. Got it. Gamache accompanied them to the end of the corridor, walking briskly to the door into the church. Opening it, he looked in. No longer filled with light, it was now filled with long and growing shadows.
A Père Abbé!
Gamache stood at the door and shouted. It felt as though he'd lobbed a bomb into the building. The chief's commanding voice bounded off the stone walls, magnifying and echoing. But instead of recoiling from it, Gamache yelled again.
Dom Philippe!
Still nothing. He stepped aside, and Beauvoir and Charbonneau hurried in.
Quickly, Jean-Guy, Gamache said, as Beauvoir passed. Carefully.
Oui, patron.
The chief watched as the two men peeled off in different directions, Beauvoir to the right and Charbonneau to the left. Gamache stood at the door, watching until both men disappeared.
Allô?
Called Gamache again, and listened. But the only response he got was his own voice.
Chief Inspector Gamache propped open the door to the church, then started down the long corridor to the closed and locked and bolted door, and the body that lay before it like an offering. It was counterintuitive to walk deliberately into a dead end, a cul-de-sac. Every training, every instinct went against it. If anything came at him down this corridor, there was no way out. He knew that was why Beauvoir had offered him his firearm, so that he'd at least have a chance. How often had he, in classes, at the academy, in sessions with new recruits, ordered them never, ever to get caught in a dead end? And yet here he was, walking back down. He'd have to give himself a stern talking to, he thought with a smile, and a failing grade. Jean-Guy Beauvoir stepped into the long corridor. It was exactly like all the others, long, with tall ceilings and a door at the far end. Emboldened by Gamache, Beauvoir yelled, "Bonjour! Allô!" Just before the door had closed, he'd heard the chief's and Charbonneau's voices mixed together, calling out in unison a single word, "Allô?" Then the door closed, and with it the familiar voices disappeared. All sound disappeared. There was silence, except for the beating of Beauvoir's heart. "Hello?" he repeated, less loudly. There were doors down either side. Beauvoir hurried along the corridor, looking into rooms, the dining room, the pantry, the kitchen, all empty. The only sign of life, a huge vat of pea soup simmering on a stove. Beauvoir opened the last door on the left, before the final door, and there he stopped, staring. Then he stepped inside, and the door softly closed behind him. Captain Charbonneau opened the doors all the way down the hallway, one after another. All were alike, 30 of them, 15 down one side, 15 down the other. Cells. He'd started off yelling into them, "Hello?" but soon realized there was no need. This was obviously the bedroom wing, with the toilets and showers in the middle, and the prior's office at the very beginning of the corridor. A large wooden door at the far end was closed. The rooms were empty. He'd known that as soon as he'd stepped into the hallway. Not a living soul. But that didn't mean there weren't some dead ones. And so he'd stooped to look under the first few beds, dreading what he might find, but needing to look anyway. 20 years he'd been on the force. He'd seen some terrible things, horrific accidents, appalling deaths, kidnappings, assaults, suicides. The disappearance of 24 monks was far from the most frightening thing he'd experienced. But it was the eeriest. Saint Gilbert entre les loups. Saint Gilbert among the wolves. Who names a monastery that? "Père Abbé," he called tentatively. "Allô?"